Here it is.
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know why this wasn't... Yes, I do know why this wasn't big news this week in this country. But here it is anyway. Despite Iran's progress since 2007 toward producing enriched uranium, the State Department's intelligence analysts think Tehran will not be able to produce weapons-grade material before 2013. That's according to a newly released document. Congratulations on releasing. By the way, just for too much perspective, the State Department's intelligence arm, the Bureau of Intelligence and Research, was the only part of the intelligence community to get it pretty much all right in the run-up to the Iraq War, which makes it interesting that Colin Powell ignored them to pay attention to George Tenet at the CIA instead. But the BNR pretty much made the right call. So here they are now saying Iran won't have even the capacity to make weapons-grade uranium for another 4 years. You know, 4 years, it's not forever. The assessment emphasizes that the analysis is based on Iran's technical capability and is not a judgment about when Iran might make any political decision. So they can't, even if they wanted to, is what they're saying, they can't do it. And the intelligence community agrees that a political decision has not yet been made. The United States transportation system does have a bullet train, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if you're aware of this. It's the Karma train. Nothing goes faster. Nothing gets to its station sooner. So this week we have the head of Sirius XM, which as soon as they merged, dumped this show. And they've been losing listeners. Totally not connected at all. I wouldn't even... But here's Mel Karmazin, one-time radio genius, saying, you know, telling the stock market investors why they shouldn't dump his stock. You know why he doesn't want them to dump his stock. But here's why he says they shouldn't dump his stock. In the long run, Sirius XM is focusing on a new program to win subscribers from people who buy used cars already equipped with satellite radio receivers. That's right. Their new business plan is to focus on people who buy used cars. That fills me with confidence. The Karma train, baby, it's on time again. Speaking of which, I'm not Keith Olbermann, so I'm not bound by any agreement to not criticize News Corporation. Chase Carey, who recently returned to News Corporation as chief operating officer, that is, he does all the surgeries in his own office. He has the tools right in his desk. Was defending Rupert Murdoch's decision to start charging for online news sites connected to News Corp, like FoxNews.com, I guess. But he said news sites. Anyway, Kerry criticized a strategy championed by Time Warner called TV Everywhere to show programs online to its own paying subscribers. That is to say, if you're a cable subscriber to Time Warner and for any reason you can't see the show, like, for instance, the cable goes out, although that never happens unless it's a Dodger game, they're offering the shows online to you for free. He criticized that as a, quote, defensive response. And he said News Corp instead aimed at developing, quote, offensive models. Mission accomplished, babe. Clean, safe, too cheap to meter. Our nuclear future. A contract forming with Columbia, South Carolina's Westinghouse nuclear fuel plant has been fired and the company cited by federal regulators after inspectors found that the foreman falsified safety records at the facility. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission announced a settlement with Westinghouse in which the company said it will improve oversight of contractors hired to work the plant It agreed to an assessment of how well company employees are trained to investigate wrongdoing. I'd settle for that settlement if I falsified records and the feds found me out. No, my taxes were, you know, let's settle. The plant had been cited by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission at least 8 times since 1997. That's reassuring. And fined at least twice after a worker found uranium-contaminated ash had built up in an incinerator, which increased chances of a nuclear accident. Let's build more of those, won't you? And from a listener, ladies and gentlemen, based on this story that ran last week on this broadcast about an interesting percentage of British Army soldiers being too fat to fight. Jason writes, I was in the Army's 75th Ranger Regiment about 16 years ago during peacetime. I entered the unit shortly after the infamous Black Hawk Down incident in Somalia. I knew then of a sort of underground movement of soldiers who had become disenfranchised and used their natural tendency to gain weight as a way to avoid deployment and to eventually get an early medical discharge from the Army. Not to say all overweight people in the Army are doing it on purpose, but that has to be a significant percentage of the issue. I personally knew about 5 soldiers who attempted or actually succeeded at this. Just felt compelled to add that. Thank you, Jason. As you were, except, you know, you could drop a few. Hello, welcome to the show.
Always
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now...
High def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland. Got to be so careful where you stand. In the digital wonderland.
News of the digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen. Billy writes, Dear Harry, in February I used my government coupon to purchase a new digital converter box, which worked fairly well, if only because I live half a mile from the local Chicago transmitters. However, tonight when I turned it on, the lights on the box flickered and then went dead. Yep, after only 6 months, my GE digital TV converter box is no more. Thank God I'm not covered by that agreement between O'Reilly and Olbermann. So I read a book instead, Billy continues. Imagine if, as a country, we become more informed because we all turn to reading, rediscovering the analog wonderland all over again. Thank you, Billy. Ellen writes, Dear Harry, I guess I'm a little slow and maybe a little smug because I have cable and felt that the digital TV deadline did not apply to me. But while driving to work last week, I was thinking about my yearly inventory of my earthquake preparedness supplies and realized that the little battery-operated TV that my parents had bought before Loma Prieta, that's the 1989 earthquake in San Francisco, and boy, did it come in handy, she adds, would require a converter box, and I think the coupon thingy ran out this weekend. Then I realized the converter box would need electricity, wouldn't it? So are there battery-operated digital TVs, or do we have to rely on, for now, analog radio, which will shortly be converted to digital also? Good questions. By the way, just speaking for myself, one of the great joys of the new digital wonderland is when you're in a hotel and you're trying to surf the channels on the TV, the new digital TVs, of course, take about 7 seconds for each channel you hit to actually appear on the screen. So if you're, surfing, that's... A few minutes you'll never see again every time you try that. But I will say my favorite program on the hotel TVs is Please Wait, Loading. I love that. I see it all the time. Dear Harry, Oliver writes, I thought you might like to know about my minor digital wonderland annoyance. We live a mere 20 miles from Mount Wilson in Southern California, where all the transmitters are, with a clear view from our house. For several years, we've had a rooftop antenna and have received the digital networks just fine through the tuner section of our DirecTV DVR. Since the digital transition, however, I have lost KCET, the local PBS station, and no amount of rescanning will get it back. I can continue to receive their subsidiary digital channels just fine. Calls to the station were met with nothing changed our end, and if you're getting the other sub-channels, there's no reason you shouldn't be getting the main station. I posted my problem on AVS forums and at least found an expert who confirmed they had, in fact, made a frequency change, but were at a loss to explain why the main channel in particular was not available. All they could recommend was upgrading and replacing the receiver hardware. That's all anybody can recommend. Buy new stuff. Since the digital transition, my DirecTV box has started to jump to HBO for no reason. Other DirecTV subscribers around the country have reported their boxes all jumping to some particular channel of its own accord. That's Oliver. And down under, Channel 9 Australia went dark for digital television viewers across the country after the network switched on its new digital channel called Go. Yes, it's ironic. What's your point? The new entertainment channel launches officially, but this was a preview Viewers with digital TV tuners found the standard and high-def versions of Nine, which was one of the major networks in Australia, went blank as soon as they picked up the new Go channel. Nine took out ads warning people they might have to rescan, but the message didn't get through to everyone. And by the way, Australia didn't do a mandated switchover. They're still a free country. And the vote so far from the people, only about 45% of the population have switched over to digital by installing a set-top box or buying a new TV set. So, majority likes analog. News of the digital wonderland. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Nice collection this week. Good sorry week. As a mass trial of reformist figures resumed in Iran on Saturday, a French researcher and an analyst at the British embassy who've been accused of spying took the stand to apologize, saying they'd only wanted to update their embassies on Iran's recent political turmoil. Those, of course, were not necessarily voluntary apologies. This one was. The Washington Post has brought down the curtain on Mouthpiece Theater. Executive editor Marcus Brockley killed the satirical video series this week after harsh criticism of a joke about Hillary Clinton, which prompted him to pull the latest episode from the paper's website. The Post staffers who appeared in the videos, Dana Milbank and Chris Saliza, agreed with the decision and apologized in separate interviews. I don't think the series worked as they intended. It was meant to be funny and insightful. It was designed as a send-up of pompous punditry. But it drew catcalls from online critics, intensifying last week after an episode about the kind of beer various politicians might drink following the beer summit. Dana Milbank said he couldn't reveal to whom President Obama would serve a brew called Mad Bitch Beer, which was followed by a brief shot of Hillary Clinton. I regret we put up that image, Milbank said. And while I highly doubt the Secretary of State has seen Mouthpiece Theater, I would be honored to have the opportunity to apologize to her over a beer. You know who, doing humor. When a critic asked her if she'd like to apologize for anything in particular, Omarosa, who gained fame on the NBC reality series, one of those words in that sentence doesn't make sense. The Apprentice, she replied, quote, I would like to first apologize for calling Janice Dickinson a crackhead, I don't know who that is, and saying that she was cuckoo and saying that she was the oldest supermodel. I might want to apologize for talking about her jowls and her bad plastic surgery. I would also like to apologize for saying that she had a bad weave and that she was a terrible mother. I also might want to apologize to Piers Morgan for saying that he was a British idiot. He's a judge on a reality competition. And maybe to Wendy Williams for calling her a man. She hosts a TV daytime talk show. I can go on and on. I just felt like having a holistic moment, Omarosa said. You can keep apologizing if you want, said one critic. I meant that, she said. I meant it from my heart. I'm evolving. No, I think you're a sign of intelligent design, babe. Deadline Des Moines, Iowa. Look for several controversial ads promoting atheism to appear back on local buses soon. Late this week, officials of the bus district reversed their decision to remove the banners, which read, Don't believe in God, you are not alone. They met with the sponsors of the ad and concluded they were operating under an outdated advertising policy. The district officials apologized to the group. That leaves only Clear Channel still operating under an outdated advertising policy. But it's too late. Deadline Mexico City, the Mexican government has apologized to Roman Catholic officials and parishioners after storming a church during Mass to arrest a drug suspect. The Public Safety Department, though, is standing by the decision to launch the raid, saying it was necessary to avoid a violent confrontation or escape. The department did say in a statement, it respects religion. It apologized for the circumstances under which the operation had to be carried out. Dateline Lakeland, Florida. Tom?
Lakeland, Florida?
That's right. One thing is for sure about the Lakeland electric billing mess in which 63,000 customers got July bills for 35 to 40 days, many of them whoppers. City commissioners are sorry. In one way or another, all seven city commissioners apologized individually at one point or another this week. Just in case that wasn't enough, said Mayor Buddy Fletcher, we all apologize. Commissioners said they realized the utilities' extended bills caused hardships in some areas and reiterated that Lakeland Electric is willing to work with people who are having trouble paying. Tom?
Lakeland Electric.
Mm-hmm. City of Ottawa, Canada officials apologized this week for the way they responded to flooding in Ottawa's West End last weekend. For nearly a week, residents there have been dealing with soggy belongings and water damage after heavy rainfall caused sewage overflows that seeped into many basements. At a public forum this week, City Manager Kent Kirkpatrick said the city was sorry for its poor response to the flooding of homes. For those failures, I am sorry, and I want to apologize to you personally and on behalf of the city, he said. He said the city's emergency response suffered from poor communication, which it will work to improve. Doesn't everybody's emergency response suffer from poor communication? Isn't that the deal? He said, we'll be focusing on the city's infrastructure. In the meantime, one resident said at a meeting, he wonders why the neighbors should continue paying their property taxes. Would you pay for a flawed car? Why would we pay for a flawed system? He said. Thank goodness that doesn't happen in this country. He didn't say that. That was me. Deadline Washington, D.C. Boeing chairman and CEO James McNerney apologized this week for a series of scandals that forced out two of his predecessors and led the company to pay a record $615 million settlement to the Justice Department. Now that's a settlement. Appearing at a Senate hearing, McNerney said Boeing takes full responsibility for the wrongful acts of the former employees who brought dishonor on a great company. He called the settlement, which ended a three-year federal investigation, tough but fair. Coupled with the loss of $1 billion worth of rocket launch contracts taken away by the Air Force and the scandal's toll on Boeing's reputation, the settlement serves as a stark reminder of the direct impact that unethical conduct can have on our bottom line, McNerney said. But here's a quote you'll want to remember, ladies and gentlemen, down the line, I think. Just bookmark this. Senator John McCain, apropos of the Justice Department settlement, especially since it allowed the possibility of a tax write-off for Boeing on the settlement money, said, quote, it seems to me if you're going to punish somebody, they should pay the fine or do the time, unquote, Senator John McCain. So I say, just file that away against the possibility that somebody else might be in that situation and he, you know, won't feel that way. Tampa, Florida, the city manager of Tampa, has apologized for a scrapped plan to take down some of the 59 U.S. flags maintained by the city. What was he thinking? What country did he think he was living in? City Manager Bill Horn apologized for approving a plan recommended by his staff to remove just over a dozen flags from locations, including several that were far from public view or in locations not maintained by the city of Tampa. The mayor, Frank Hibbard, had chided Horn for not informing the city council or the mayor's office of the plan so they could gaffer tape him and keep him in a closet. I will take that one squarely on the chin, Horn said. I make thousands of decisions weekly, and every now and then I make a wrong one. Deadline New York. All-star forward Rashard Lewis of the Orlando Magic apologized for a doping violation that brought a 10-game suspension by the NBA, saying he ingested a tainted supplement. I take full responsibility for the situation and accept the corresponding penalty. Lewis said, I apologize to Magic fans, my teammates, and this organization for not doing the research that should come with good judgment. I hope every athlete can learn from my mistake, that supplements, no matter how innocent they seem, should only be taken after consulting an expert in the field. Lewis will be banned from the first 10 games of the season or the first 10 games that he's physically able to play. The regional coroner's office in Windsor, Ontario, has apologized to the family of a 10-year-old local girl whose brain was retained after her death without her parents' knowledge. Has the L.A. coroner apologized for not returning Michael Jackson's brain yet? I don't think so. Deadline Frankfort, Kentucky, Democratic U.S. This just makes you glad, I think, that this is basically, for most of us, a non-political campaign year. Democratic U.S. Senate candidate, this is in Kentucky, Jack Conway, reversed himself this week and apologized for having used profanity in a public speech during the weekend at the small Kentucky town of Fancy Farm. At the speech, in a picnic, Conway said he had a tough hide and was, quote, one tough son of a bitch, unquote. His chief Democratic opponent, Lieutenant Governor Daniel Mangiardo, called for an apology for the profanity, but Conway's campaign refused. Conway, the state's attorney general, changed course the next day. I apologize to picnic organizers, parishioners, and guests that I got caught up in the fiery rhetoric that is a trademark of Fancy Farm and made a remark in reference to myself that I should not have. When someone attacks my family with statements that are simply untrue, I am passionate in their defense and fight back. His opponent had accused Conway of being, quote, with the silver spoon crowd. That was the attack on his family. The user who posted an angry, anti-gay Facebook page in the wake of a deadly attack in Tel Aviv, Israel, apologized after his page was hacked and turned into a pro-gay forum. The group I Also Hate Gays had amassed about 150 members when a user hacked in on Wednesday and turned the anti-gay group pro-gay. I Also Hate Gays was the first of several groups that appeared on Facebook in the aftermath of last week's shooting at a Tel Aviv gay club that left 2 dead and 11 wounded. The I Also Hate Gays Facebook founder quickly apologized after being hacked, saying he started the group, quote, in a moment of stupidity. Dateline Sunset Hills, Missouri. A Missouri Burger King has apologized to, talking about moments of stupidity, has apologized to a woman saying an employee took the fast food restaurant's no shirt, no shoes, no service policy too far. An employee told a suburban St. Louis woman to leave the restaurant because her six-month-old daughter was not wearing shoes. Burger King spokeswoman Denise Wilson said health code violations do not include no shoes provisions. It's simply a company policy. The woman and her family were offered a free meal at Burger King, so I think there'll be another apology forthcoming shortly. And one day after angrily calling out a retail shop in Canal Park, Minnesota, for selling T-shirts offensive to American Indians, Donna Bluebird, an American Indian woman from Duluth, was shaking hands with the store's owner. Simon Shakad, owner of I Love Duluth, agreed this week to issue an apology to Bluebird and all American Indians for selling the shirts in his store, which features tourist merchandise and joke T-shirts. It was the right thing to do, Shakad said about the apology. I don't want to offend anyone. The shirts at the center of controversy were printed with the lines, my Indian name is Drinks Like Fish, and my Indian name is Crawling Drunk. Yeah. Why would you think that would offend anyone? The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. As always, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Starts up in my mind.
This is Le Show. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, has been touring Africa. She was on that tour while images of her husband, Bill Clinton, meeting with North Korea's dear leader, Kim Jong-il, were flashed around the world. That meeting preceded the release of the two journalists from Current TV, Laura Ling and Yuna Lee, who had been captured, tried, and convicted, and supposedly were serving a sentence at hard labor, although they were still being held in Pyongyang in relatively non-hard labor circumstances, which was a tip-off to some observers that the North Koreans did want to make a deal. They did insist, however, that Bill Clinton come over to visit them, because he's a former president, you know? I guess George Bush Sr., they didn't realize, was a former president, too. Or Jimmy Carter. I guess the dear leader doesn't read up on history. He's a big Daffy Duck fan. Did you know that? Yeah, that's true. Anyway, the trip did, to some, focus more attention on former President Clinton's business contacts. Dow Chemical paid for his flight from New York to Burbank. There he boarded an all-business class Boeing 737 jet provided by a friend of Bill Clinton's, wealthy Hollywood financier and producer Steve Bing, like Clinton, a bachelor. For the flight to North Korea. Yes, it does sound like another episode of Clinton Something next here on Le Show.
Clinton Something, the State Department years.
Mr. President, I meant what I said up there during the press avail.
You hugged me, I remember that.
No, I expressed my deep gratitude.
That's right, you did, and I guess I was free to assume that some of that gratitude was felt toward me.
Yes, sir, you were free to assume that.
Well, I got to tell you something, my friend.
Mm?
Anytime someone calls me up and says they need me to come rescue two Asian girls, it strikes me as almost a sacred duty.
I hear you. Seriously, though, Laura and Yuna were doing important work for us, really helping to rebrand Current TV with a much more robust journalistic identity.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good thing, I guess. Have to confess, I haven't seen much of the channel.
Well, join the club. But we're chugging right along.
Hey, in this economy, that's called success.
And Tipper was so moved when she heard about your friend, Mr. Bing.
Really?
On the fact that he would use that private jet to go around the world and rescue pet cats. You know Tipper, an animal.
Rescue pet? Oh, you mean because those flights are called the... See, that's just kind of an insider joke among a few of the I mean, that's not really why they... Plane has that nickname, you know, but listen, I will be delighted to convey her good wishes to him.
Listen, Bill, I know we're a long way from those don't stop thinking about tomorrow days on the campaign bus.
Oh, those were good times, my friend, but you know what the next line of that song is?
Yesterday's gone, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of water has gone under that bridge. A lot of it polluted, but this was a good thing you did for a couple of very good people. Even though you can never really make amends for sabotaging my presidential ambitions, you've made a good start.
Albert, I'm half an hour late for a congratulations dinner at the Playboy Mansion, but let me just tell you one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you had gotten past your aversion to bragging on our success together and gotten to be president, by now you'd have been out of office, doing just what you are doing. Continuing to make a positive difference in the world, just like I am. So, no regrets, my friend.
Well, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that was a long plane flight over there all by yourself.
Oh, I had a couple of Asian girls going that direction, too. Let's keep in touch, Albert.
You got it.
Damn it, Hill, this is just typical. You know, I'm hailed as a hero everywhere but inside my own home.
Correction, Bill. You're in my home. Your home's in Chappaqua.
You know what I mean.
Well, what am I supposed to think? That you took all the media oxygen away from my African trip because you were my best friend?
They called. Your president called and told me that visiting Kim Jong-il was the only way to get those two women released.
I'm perfectly aware of that. I am included in the cable traffic. I'm not being powelized yet. But when my own husband drowns a major foreign policy trip of mine in a sea of pathetic coverage, just so Al's little TV channel doesn't provoke an international incident, being powelized does seem like the inevitable next step. I mean, you could have rescued them next week after my trip was over.
Hill, have you seen Al's little TV channel? It's like a bunch of YouTube clips without the people falling down. Look, hon. Last thing I'd want to do is Bigfoot an important overseas photo op of yours.
Two things. It wasn't a photo op. And just for the record, the last thing you'd want to do is help me.
Oh, that's so unfair, babe. Me bringing home those women lent a halo effect to your whole foreign policy operation. You, me, and the president working together to get a humanitarian outcome from a crazy dictator. Who doesn't approve of that? Only John Bolton, and he's crazier than Kim Jong-il. It's win, win, win.
You do know Al didn't want to ask you to go.
He didn't.
He wanted the president to send him.
Really? That surprises me.
You don't think he would have liked the attention and the credit?
Oh, I guess so. I just didn't think he was into Asian babes. Well, so why didn't the president send Al?
Because Kim Jong-il insisted on meeting with you.
I don't know whether to feel flattered or ashamed.
Oh, yes, you do.
That was just a figure of speech.
My point is that you were a bargaining chip. Nothing more, nothing less.
Mm-hmm. So how was Africa?
Oh, it was fine. They asked about you.
Mm-hmm. What'd you say?
I said, all things considered, you chose to feel flattered.
You know, Toots, from now on, when you're on an overseas trip, you can count on me to make myself scarce. Won't even Twitter. Promise.
Look, hon, you know what it's like. There are people high up in this administration who would love to cut my cojones off and put them on the mantle just for no other reason than to prove that I had them. I need you on my side.
You got it, Hill. You and me against the world. Just like the old days.
And while I do appreciate you saving the taxpayers' money by taking a private jet on this mission, next time, please consider taking a plane that doesn't have a condom machine on board.
You got it. Who told you about that?
Tipper Gore.
Youthful angst and middle-aged power. Together, they add up to Clinton something. The State Department years.
We'll be right back.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Yes, we can. Within 60 years, the Arctic Ocean could be a stagnant, polluted soup. That sounds good. That's good eating. Without drastic cuts in greenhouse gas emissions, the transpolar drift, one of the Arctic's most powerful currents and a key disperser of pollutants, is likely to disappear because of global warming. This according to New Scientist. The transpolar drift is a cold surface current. Man, I know that feeling. It travels right across the Arctic from central Siberia to Greenland and eventually out into the Atlantic. Together with the Beaufort Gyre, the transpolar drift keeps Arctic waters well mixed and ensures that pollution never lingers there for long. To better understand the dispersal of pollution in the Arctic, Ola Johansson, director of the Nansen Environmental and Remote Sensing Center in Bergen, Norway, and his colleagues decided to study the spread of radioactive substances from nuclear testing, bomb factories, and nuclear power plant accidents. Measurements taken between 1948 and 1999 were plugged into a high-resolution model of the ocean's circulation combined with a climate model. Their model confirmed that most pollutants, including pesticide, petroleum residue, and nuclear fallout, are currently washed out into the North Atlantic by the transpolar drift, but perhaps not for long. In a business-as-usual scenario in which atmospheric carbon dioxide levels double by 2070, Johansson and his colleagues found the transpolar drift stops, the Beaufort Gyre and Gulf Stream weaken considerably. One reason for this sluggish behavior is a change in wind patterns driven by global warming and rapid melting of the Arctic sea ice. So don't go swimming in the North Atlantic in 2050. That's my recommendation. Psychological barriers like uncertainty, mistrust, and denial keep most Americans from acting to fight climate change, says a task force at the American Psychological Association. Policymakers, scientists, and marketers should look at these factors to figure out what might prod people to take action. How about fear? That's a thing. Catholics in two southern Swiss Alpine communities want to give up a centennial tradition of praying for the retreat of mountain glaciers and switch instead to prayers against climate change. A lot of ice has already melted, says the priest, Pascal Vernetz. He's seeking the approval of Pope Benedict for the change on behalf of his parishioners, and an audience for the local bishop is reportedly being arranged in Rome. Since the end of the 17th century, the faithful in the districts have blamed the nearby Aletsch Glacier, the longest in the Alps, for flooding and prayed for it to melt. No more. Climate change is melting America's glaciers at the fastest rate in recorded history, exposing the country to higher risks of drought and rising sea levels, according to U.S. government study of glaciers. The long-running study of three benchmark glaciers in Alaska and Washington State by the U.S. Geological Survey indicated a sharp rise in the melt rate over the last 10 or 15 years. Scientists said the three are representatives of thousands of other glaciers in North America. The melt rate has definitely increased, says Ed Josberger. This certainly is a very strong indicator that climate change is occurring and its effects on glaciers are virtually worldwide. And the cure is worse than the disease, at least in the terms of, in the case of geoengineering. According to Science Daily, geoengineering techniques, which aim to slow global warming through the use of human-made changes to the Earth's land, sea, or atmosphere, well, it may cause other environmental harm, according to new research. Ecologists discussed the viability of geoengineering at a recent symposium, concluding it's potentially dangerous at the global scale where the risks outweigh the benefits. The bigger the scale of the approach, the riskier it is for the environment, says session organizer Robert Jackson, Duke University Center on Global Change. Global alterations of the Earth's natural cycles have too many uncertainties to be viable with our current level of understanding, he says. Yeah, because we're so smart. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, news from outside the bubble. Outside the bubble is the place to be this week. Britain's mission in Afghanistan could last for up to 40 years, says the next head of the British Army. 40 years, ladies and gentlemen. Why, that's General Sir David Richards says the Army's role will evolve, but the whole process might take as long as 30 to 40 years, so it could be 50. He emphasized that British troop involvement should only be needed for the medium term, but insisted there was absolutely no chance of NATO pulling out. British deaths have been rocketing upwards in the last few weeks, raising doubts in the UK about the Afghanistan mission, which is only, what, the third time the Brits have been there? The shadow defense secretary, that is to say the opposition defense secretary, says 30 to 40 years in Afghanistan was unaffordable. Well, not if you don't dismantle a safety net. Of the Taliban, General Richards, the incoming head of the British Army, says, we can and are out fighting them. We're out fighting them. Now to Iraq, from the Times of London, soon to charge, so you may not be hearing stuff from the Times of London very soon on this program. Baghdad police say that a group of armed men who pulled off the city's biggest bank robbery since the invasion was made up of, wait for it, presidential security guards. It's the new Iraq. They killed 8 bank staff and used dynamite to blast open the vault of the bank in the wealthy district of Karada, making off with about $6 million. On the run, the men passed through 5 official checkpoints and defied a nighttime curfew in southern Baghdad without being challenged. Their day job was to protect the vice president, the highest-ranking Shia official in the country after the prime minister, Maliki. No street police dared to stop them. The men later stashed their loot in offices belonging to the leader of the second-largest Shia party and a close ally of the vice president. The Interior Ministry received a tip late last week and arrested the men, but not before getting the okay from the Prime Minister, who belongs to a rival Shia party. No suggestion has been made in Iraq media that the Vice President or the party leader benefited from the brutal robbery, but its aftermath offers a host of insights into the current state of Iraq. First of all, the security forces, once deeply involved in sectarian violence, are still highly unreliable, says the Times of London, and on occasion outright dangerous. They have been infiltrated by criminals and insurgents, according to the Interior Minister. We did good. We did good there. To Pakistan, from the Telegraph in London, elements within Pakistan's military intelligence agencies sympathetic towards terrorists have been arrested, according to the Interior Minister. So they knew the parts of the Pakistani military intelligence agencies were sympathetic to the Taliban. They just found out, and they arrested them. The Interior Minister, Mr. Malik, told a TV channel they were officers of the rank of major, and they were plotting to target army generals. He said there have been some elements in the intelligence agencies who have had links with terrorists, including the head of the Pakistani Taliban, who's now been killed. In recent months, several Pakistani army majors have been linked to kidnappings and murders carried out by militant outfits. An army major has been linked to the murder of a former army general last year. Last year, the Pakistani government conceded that members of the Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, the ISI, were giving support to the Taliban. A spokesman said the Taliban sympathizers had to be rooted out of the ISI. But in reflection of the sensitivity of the issue, the government quickly retracted that statement and maintained the problems at ISI were in the past. And under the radar, more than outside the bubble, in 2004, Rene Dufault, an environmental health researcher at the FDA, stumbled upon an obscure EPA report on chemical plants' mercury emissions. Some chemical companies, she learned, make lye by pumping salt through large vats of mercury. Since lye is a key ingredient in making high fructose corn syrup, she wondered if mercury might be getting into the ubiquitous sweetener that makes up 1 out of every 10 calories Americans eat. And the answer is yes. There are traces of mercury in, candy and cereal and stuff your kids eat. Mercury's good for kids, isn't it? News from outside the bubble. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, from the Inspectors General, reports by the Office of the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction highlight certain accomplishments we've had. North of Baghdad, in a desert outside the city of Baqaba, is a sprawling structure locals have labeled the Whale. It was meant to be a new maximum security prison built by the United States. The only thing operational on the half-mile-wide unfinished construction site is a makeshift guardhouse. After paying $46 million to an American company, Parsons Engineering, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Go Boys, canceled the project 3 years ago. The facility was so poorly built, it is only fit for demolition, which, of course, would cost another few million dollars. The can-do people coming to your place soon. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the East Coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, available around the world via the internet on your computer at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone at stitcher.com. Available as a free download for members at audible.com. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like us being able to afford to tear down the prison in Iraq, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on, just a couple of the things always available at harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.